The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Mr. Kevin Nealon, how are you, sir?
How's it going, Chris?
Good. The last time, well, the only time we ever met was at a radio station in Florida. And you were doing gigs in Tampa, where I live, and I was there promoting whatever the hell I was promoting. Do you remember who the other person was that we were talking to?
I don't, but I was just talking to your producer. I said, you know, I met Chris once, and I don't remember where it was, but it was a while ago. But I remember you were a nice guy.
Well, thank you. We actually exchanged numbers, and from time to time, I would shoot you a text here and there. But the other guy that was there being talked to was Evel Knievel.
Was it really?
He was like over the phone. They were talking to him. I remember you and I were sitting there going, wow. Evel Knievel, man. So
yeah, there's your phone number right there.
There you go. I think I've texted you from time to time whenever, like if I watch, for example, like the Chris Farley, Patrick Swayze, Chippendale sketch.
That's right, the audition.
Yeah, I'll text you and say,
yeah,
like,
that was a great sketch.
What was it like? But there's lots to talk about. Let's go into that because to me, that might be the funniest sketch in SNL history, and you were quite involved in it.
Yeah, I think it was a funniest sketch, at least one of the funniest ones, that's for sure. Chris Farley's, if nobody has seen it, it's Chris Farley's auditioning to be a Chippendale dancer against Patrick Swayze. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're wearing the leather pants, and Farley's got the collar and the bow tie, and he's got the cuffs, you know, the cufflinks. And I'm one of the judges, kind of like the American Idol judges are sitting behind a table, and it's me, Mike Myers, and Jan Hooks. And Chris Farley comes out, and he's competing against Patrick Swayze, and they're both dancing, and Farley's just giving everything he's got. You know, he's swinging his belly around. He's just jerking and, you know, really working hard at it. And the music stops, and I almost broke up. I've never broken character on that show. Do you know why?
Why?
I'm a professional.
Of course.
So anyway, but I came close to laughing on that one. And of course, he loses to Patrick Swayze. Big surprise. But in hindsight, and I don't know if this is true, I heard that Farley was a little reticent about doing that sketch because, you know, he was a little self-conscious about taking his shirt off. But that doesn't sound like Farley to me because he would do anything for a laugh. In fact, one time, you know, he shares an office with, or he did share an office area on the 17th floor of 30 Rock with Adam Sandler, David Spade, Tim Meadows, and Chris Rock was nearby. And Farley's always trying to get them to laugh, right? So he came in once and he said he was going to drop his drawers and stick his ass out as far as it would go in the window and take a big dump down into 49th Street, 17 floors below. So they're all like, do it, Farley, do it. And he did it, and he wasn't out far enough. So his poo landed on the windowsill on the 17th floor. It's still there today.
Right. If you go there, you can still see it.
It's a big stop on the NBC tour. I'll tell you that.
Sure it is. Right. Exactly. Exactly. But this is great, Kevin, because you were one of the longest tenured regulars on SNL, I think, to this day.
No. That was me and Tim Meadows. I think we're there for 9 years. But, I mean, there's some people that have been there for Horatio Sanz, I think it was, and Kenan Thompson have been there 15 years or something.
Well, not the longest, but one of the longest. I mean, 9 years on that show is a long time. So, I mean, how do you last that long on a show that's so high pressure for 9 years?
Well, first of all, I was surprised I'd ever get on that show because I don't do characters or accents or anything. You know, Dana Carvey was my friend and he got selected to be on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And so he recommended me. Like I said, I didn't even expect to be on that show. And when I wasn't like a lot of these actors that wanted to become bust out of there and be a big star like within a year or two. I was just saying, this is a great job, man. I'm going to try and keep this as long as I can, you know?
Right, right, right.
And I just kind of sat back and wrote sketches. I learned how to do sketches and write characters and do characters because I was just a stand-up. You know, I am stand-up. Really, really good stand-up.
Yeah, of course.
It's true. I'll show you. You'll see.
So tell us what kind of the audition process to get into SNL. You said you didn't think you'd be on the show. How did you land that?
Dane and I shared a house in Hollywood Hills for a little bit. And he got selected to be on SNL. This was back in the 1900s, Chris.
1986, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, 1986. And he goes off to New York. I'm really excited for him. And 2 weeks after he's gone, he calls me. He goes, Kev, I'm out at Lorne Michaels' house. I'm in the back bedroom. Guess who's in the kitchen? Bill Murray. I'm like, no way. He goes, yeah. He goes, anyway, Lorne was looking for one more cast member. I told him about you, and I think he's going to see your audition tapes. And I'm like, Bill Murray's in the kitchen? You know what I mean?
Right.
I wasn't buying into that other stuff because I knew I'd never get on that show, right? Because I don't do characters or accents or anything. So I sent my audition tape in, and a couple weeks later, I get another call from Dana out of the blue. Kev, I'm back at Lorne Michaels' house. I'm in the back bedroom because who's in the kitchen? Steve Martin. No. Yes. Anyway, good news. Lorne liked your tape. I think they're going to fly you in for an audition. I'm like, Steve Martin's in the kitchen? Anyway, Chris, I flew in there. It was a free trip to New York. I figured, you know, what have I got to lose? And I'll see 30 Rock and see where they shoot SNL. And I did my audition, but I wasn't doing characters or anything. I was doing mostly my stand-up. A couple of things that Dana Carvey and I used to do, you know, we'd stand in the driveway of the house we were renting, and we kind of jam on some characters, but there was nothing really concrete. So I kind of winged it. And I went back to L.A. here, and 2 weeks later, I find myself sitting in a high-rise in Beverly Hills across from Lorne Michaels, and he's offering me a job on SNL. And I said, well, thank you very much, Mr. Michaels. Let me think about it over the weekend. That's how I roll, baby. That's how I roll. How do you think I got on your show?
We've been trying for years.
I worked it.
So what is it that Lorne is looking for? Because I always, there's a real connection between SNL and WWE, WWF, and that I worked for Vince McMahon for many years. And it's the same as SNL. Lorne and Vince both created this whole pop culture phenomenon that's based on rotating talent. You know, talent gets big and they go other places. And then you got to bring new talent up. And sometimes the talent pool isn't as good as the other years. And sometimes it is. What is it, you know, that Lorne looks for? How do you stay involved in SNL? Because there's some guys that are never on. There's other guys that are on every skit. Like, how does that kind of dynamic work?
Well, it's an interesting question. I was hired as a feature player the first year. That meant I was a writer. I was a writer and a feature player. And they guaranteed 7 shows I would get on. But I got on every show. And I wrote a lot. And I got a lot of writing done. And the next year, they said, hey, we could, Lorne said, we can make you a regular cast member or you can keep your writing credit. So I said cast member. And I continued to write like most of us did. You're right. It is cyclical. You know, it's like once everybody's seen your tricks, they're bringing more people in.
Yeah.
When I first got on that show, Chris, I think there's only 8 of us. And now there's like 30 or something.
There's so many, yeah.
20 minutes, yeah, to get through. So there were a lot more bigger pieces of pie for each one of us. Whereas now, I don't know, it's got to be like a, you know, a free-for-all over there. But yeah, I mean, I just kicked back. And like I said, I wasn't in a hurry to get out of there. I like that job. A lot of people complain that it's stressful. And and it is stressful, but it's not, you know, I was able to withstand it for 9 years. And I kind of liked it. And you know, I like doing that.
You're talking about, you know, I don't know when you start writing, if it's Tuesday maybe. And obviously you get to Saturday and then you get Sunday off and you got to do it all over again. I mean, I think that's where the high pressure element comes in. There's not like any, well, there's an off season, but during the season, yeah, there's no real off days.
Yeah. You do like, I think it's like 2 weeks on, a week off, 3 weeks on, a week off. So you get those little windows of a hiatus, but it is true, man. It's a grind and you give everything you got on that one show that Saturday night. And then all of a sudden, you go to the after party, and then by the time you get home, it's like 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, and then you sleep through most of Sunday. And then all of a sudden, you're back meeting with the next guest host, and then you're trying to come up with another idea again, go through it all again.
Is that what cast members would do or writers would do? Because you mentioned you did both.
No, cast members too, because they want to get on. They want to get on the show. And if nobody's writing a sketch for them, you know, then they're out of luck. So, you know, if you can write, you write. Otherwise, you just pester the writers. Write something for me. Come on. I got rent to pay.
But that never really works, though. I think the best thing is to kind of, you kind of have to come up with your own stuff, right?
Yeah, you do. I mean, hopefully people will be writing for you. I think I was right in the middle somewhere. I wasn't like the go-to guy like Dana Carvey was, you know, mm-hmm. He was kind of the, Phil Hartman was in every sketch, you know, because he was a utility guy.
Right.
And I was in a lot too. And in fact, I saw Al Franken not too long ago. I said, I was kind of the straight man on that show, wasn't I? He goes, no, you played attitude. You were the one who played attitude the best.
I would think, especially in the 80s, like, you know, I think everybody's got their era of SNL.
Yeah.
That was back when I was in high school. So you would have parties to watch SNL. Maybe somebody sneaks in a bottle of vodka and you'd be watching, you know, whatever was going on. But you guys had a classic cast. You mentioned Carvey and Lovitz and those types of guys. And then Spades coming in and you got Sandler coming in. And you mentioned Jan Hooks, who was great, and Victoria Jackson. There was a real great 4 or 5 year span of just a great core cast and then other people coming in and out.
Yeah, it really was. And like I said, after a while, you burn through all your tricks and Lauren knows it. And, you know, the uppers at NBC know it. So they start bringing in some cavalry, you know, they start bringing mm-hmm. people with new tricks until they run out of tricks. And then they keep bringing more. And also you're getting older too. When I was on that show, I was 33 or 32. And then we're all kind of hanging out except for one of the other cast members. And we heard he was an older guy and he was 37. That was Phil Hartman. I remember 37 sounded so old at the time. You know, oh man, yeah. They got an adult coming on the show.
right.
Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So talk about some of your biggest hits on the show, so to speak. And I would say that one of the all-time greats sketches that you had as reoccurring characters was Hans and Franz with Carvey. Obviously, Schwarzenegger's huge at the time, but kind of talk about how great that was, because that's still some, I'll tie your flabby pectorals like a Christmas bow, and believe me, no one would want to open you.
That's right. Yeah. Hans and Franz came up after the first season of SNL. Me and Dana Carvey and Dennis Miller went on tour. We did a stand-up tour. I don't know how many cities we did, maybe 30 cities. And we were in Des Moines, Iowa, in a Red Roof Inn. And I was watching it was called Up Close and Personal. I think it was on Showtime or something. And they were interviewing Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, we've all heard him talk before, but just to like hear him in an interview was just kind of funny. And that was a long time ago too. You know, he was saying something like, you know, they said, Arnold, what do you do when you get into town? Like, let's say you're traveling. What's the first thing you do? He goes, well, you know, I like to slip into the nice light cotton shirt. And then I go out on the town, you know, and then I come back to my hotel room and I slip into the nice light, you know, the white cotton sheets, you know, and things like that. So I called Dana and he started watching it. And then for the rest of the tour, we just talking, you know, we're talking like Arnold. And we said, you know, we got to come up with some characters based on that for next season. So, yeah, we just got in a room. And I think I went to his apartment or something. And we just started hammering it out. And I used to live in Germany when I was a kid. So I came up with the names too. Yeah. So we just thought, hey, this would be great. Two really defensive, out of shape, pseudo bodybuilders who claim they're cousins, distant cousins of Arnold Schwarzenegger's. And, you know, we're just berate everybody, you know. Yeah, you know, if you think you're so nice and good and, you know, strong, hear me now and believe me later. I could take your belt off and it would cause a flabalanche. All right. Let's talk. But, you know, Chris, how they came together, you know, we've developed them and then we put them out there. It kind of got a tepid response. You know, we thought, okay, well, that was it. You know, we gave it a good try and, you know, there wasn't much excitement about doing it again. And then I think about a week or two later, I said, hey, man, let's do another Hans and Franz. Let's get that out there. And as soon as we came out, the audience recognized us. Mm. And they just went crazy. So then we knew we had to come hit characters right there. And then other people started to help us write them.
Well, it's funny. And by the way, Carvey and Miller, both Talk is Jericho alumni as well. So you're now
Oh, nice.
But that was the era when they were making a lot of SNL movies. Was there ever talk of doing a Hans and Franz movie?
Yeah, there was. It's funny you should ask that because we just did a big Conan O'Brien chat about the Hans and Franz movie. It was called Hans and Franz, the Girly Man Dilemma.
Girly Man.
Which is appropriate now, I guess. And Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to produce it and co-star in it.
No.
Yeah. So we talked about that on Conan. And let's see, Robert Smigel was there. He was one of the writers. And me and Conan and Dana. It was really funny. It was a musical. It turned out to be a musical.
Of course.
And I loved the opening because we lived in Little Austria. In New York City, Little Austria was up. You take the cable car up from Randall Island, I think it is, and you take it up into somehow you go into Little Austria, and it's black and white, and everybody's yodeling and sweeping the sidewalk with a straw, you know, broom, yeah. And we're walking around, you know, like we're muscle men, and then we decide we're going to go to Los Angeles to find our cousin Arnold, so we get on a bicycle. On the way out, we start picking up hitchhikers along the way. And all of a sudden, they're on a unicycle behind our bike. Oh, no. They're on a bicycle built for three now. It keeps getting longer. And we're stopping at all these places like, you know, Bavarian Bratwurst Land and, you know, everything that reminds us of Austria. Anyway, we get out to California and we hook up with Arnold. The problem was we wrote Arnold into it too heavy. Mm. And so if you didn't do it, you know, the movie wouldn't get made. So that was, I think, one of our mistakes. And then Arnold, I guess he got... He was doing other films. You know, these guys have so many films lined up. And if they just did a movie spoofing himself, I think he did Last Action Hero. He kind of like, you know, I don't want to do that again, something else. So anyway, it kind of went away. But we read the script on SNL, on Conan show.
Oh, wow.
We read a lot of it. Yeah, you can check it out. And then Arnold comes on. Arnold comes on a couple weeks later, and he's talking to Conan. He goes, yeah, that was the funniest script, you know, the walking down the hallway. And, you know, somebody says, how do I get to the bathroom? You say, you go down to the hallway, you take a right at the pectorals, you know, and then you go straight down, you know, to the calf muscle. And that's it. And we had him living in a house. And to get into the house, it was like two big buttocks. And the door was in the middle of the buttocks.
Yeah, totally right up the alley of the Hans and Franz vibe, right?
Yeah, but he loved it. I mean, now he loves it. You know, 30 years ago, it would have been great if he loved it and wanted to really do it.
Back then, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's still funny. It holds up.
Just hearing that voice is great because you got the nuances of it. It's you're nailing it. Let's talk a little bit about another great bit that you did where you did Kevin Kline's monologue.
Yeah, I'm not an impressionist. So I think he was coming in and that was just a practice run, I think. I don't really remember the circumstances for that. Or was that was actually on the show, wasn't it? That was part of the opening.
Yeah, you did Kevin Kline's monologue as Kevin, or you did it for Kevin Kline.
Yeah. That's so funny, Chris, because I'll see a rerun every once in a while, and I'll have no idea what that sketch is about.
Right.
Or that I was even in it, for that matter. So when you mentioned Kevin Kline, I thought maybe I was just doing something in rehearsal because he couldn't make it, but maybe that's what the sketch was about. The cold opening.
Well, it's funny too, because when you've been around for a long time, like for me, I'll see, you know, a wrestling match or something like that, an interview that I did, and you'd be like, I have no recollection of this whatsoever. And someone's like, no, it's the best thing you've ever done. I'm like, thanks, I guess.
Yeah, right. I know it. It's, I guess that's when you've been in the ring that long, I guess you get kind of beat up. I remember.
Part of the longevity, right?
Yeah.
How about Subliminal Man? That was another great character that you had.
Thanks. That's kind of what I went into. That's the only character I had going into that show. And that kind of came from my stand-up act. I would, you know, I'd be talking, telling a story, and I would just start slipping these things, these words in there. Because I went to school for advertising. I have a BS in marketing. And I learned about subliminal advertising in college. So I just kind of combined those two to get things that I wanted. You know, subliminal, if people don't know that, subliminal advertising is allegedly, there was a time in the 50s where they would flash a word really quickly on the screen and you wouldn't even consciously see it, but subconsciously you would see it. And then, you know, if it was for Budweiser all of a sudden. You say, oh, man, I really feel like getting a Budweiser, you know, I don't know, for some reason. So, you know, it really wasn't, it didn't work or it didn't happen. So I thought that would be a kind of a cool character. And it's actually the first sketch I did, Chris, on that show. And I'm about ready to go on to do that because it's difficult to do because you're inserting words, you know, in the sentence. Like, you know, I went over to your house the other day and you have such a beautiful house, cesspool. I mean, I love it. I love your house, the way you've got it all fixed up, sewer pit. I mean, just, I love it, you know. Anyway, things like that, you know. So I'm getting ready to go on. I'm kind of going over my lines in my head and we're like 10 seconds away from commercial. And Lorne Michaels, the creator of the show, the producer, he comes up alongside me. He puts his hand on my shoulder and he said, looking up to me, he said, "Are you sure this is what you want?" That wasn't much of a distraction.
Because that's the thing. Lorne will kill a sketch instantly if he doesn't think it works. If you rehearse it and it doesn't get a good reaction, he'll cut it like as the show's going, right?
Unless he's in it. That was one of the tips that you give to the new writers. If you want your sketch to get on, put Lorne in it a little bit. Yeah. That was it. That was the first sketch. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. And then I talked to John Lovitz. He's my boss. And he's giving me a promotion because I said, you know, they're working really hard promotion. And I don't know if there's anything involved in it, Mets tickets. You know what I mean? And I want you to have some Mets tickets for the game tonight. And on the way out to Victoria. Victoria, you're doing a great job here. And we should have dinner sometime. Your treat. All right. Okay.
Yeah, your treat. That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, you were saying about how you watched that show when you were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Usually whenever anybody, their favorite cast is always when they were in high school.
Yeah.
Because that's when people watched it, I guess, in high school.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That was your era. And even for us a little bit earlier, like in junior high school, the Martin Short, Harry Shearer, Christopher Guest era was a great one. And then it kind of went dark for a few years. And then it came back. Only one or two seasons, and then it was you, like I said, with Dana Carvey, was because Carvey was so huge, you know what I mean? That, and then Lovitz got huge, and then you were there, and they had such a great, you know, so Carvey was kind of the star.
I like, the way you say that. Carvey got huge, yeah. Lovitz got huge, and you were there.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah, you were in it, you know? But that's what I mean, though, like, that's what I mean, you're always there, and then yeah. Farley comes in, and you're there still, and then, of course, then you're doing the Weekend Update, which is, that was kind of not as cool until you got it. That's one thing I would say you took to the next level was Weekend Update.
Yeah, well, the thing with Weekend Update, by the way, you know, you say it was quiet for a couple of years. Lorne Michaels left that show after the original cast, Belushi and all those people, for 5 years. He was been for 5 years, then he left. And then I think her name was Jean Demanian took over. And,
yeah, Ebersol.
Ebersol, Dick Ebersol, yeah.
Yeah.
And they just didn't find their footing. And they had really good actors on there, Robert Downey Jr., Anthony Michael Hall, Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on there.
Right.
And it just wasn't, the synergy wasn't there or the writing wasn't there. And then Lorne took it over again and he had... Oh, he had one season. That's the one that Robert Downey Jr., those guys were on. But yeah, I guess the synergy just wasn't there. And then they kind of cleaned house on that one, except for John Lovitz and Dennis Miller, I think, and Nora Dunn, and then brought us in. And that's kind of when it started clicking again. But yeah, Weekend Update was fun for me to do. It was a sit-down job, which I like. But it was difficult because I had to continue to do the sketches and write different sketches for myself. And then try to come up with Weekend Update jokes too. And the difficult part was you couldn't even start thinking about Weekend Update jokes until like Saturday morning because all the, you know, the talk show host covered all that stuff during the week.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, Saturday morning, I get up early, I get like all the papers, the newspapers, because back then there was no Google. There was no like internet or Google or anything. So we had to look at AP photos, Associated Press photos, and then just get newspapers. So, it's funny. I would, you know, a lot of the writers didn't want to write for Weekend Update because it wasn't a glorifying job. It was just, you know, coming up with stories, Weekend Update stories. So Lorne and I would be paying people in LA, like comedy writers, $50 a joke to fax me jokes for the show. And so Lorne finally started putting out a hot buffet up on the 17th floor in the writers' wing to try to entice writers to come. And write some jokes, and he had the newspapers out there, you know, on the table. And the only ones that came were the newer, younger writers who weren't that good. and Al Franken, because he was a political pundit, and
yeah,
Norm Macdonald would come up just to have a hot breakfast and read the paper. It's like he was sitting in a cafe.
Just to hang out?
Yeah, just have breakfast and read the paper, see what's going on.
But that's a certain kind of a small collection of distinguished gentlemen and ladies, so to speak, the ones that were able to hold down the Weekend Update fort, because that's something that's been going on since season one in SNL and continues to this day.
Yeah, it is. It's really the focal point of the show. It's the centerpiece. Once you hit the Weekend Update, you know the show is kind of halfway there. You know, all the strong sketches have been on already.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So what made you finally decide to leave SNL all those years later?
Several different reasons. I had been there for 9 seasons. I was getting bored with the show. You know why I knew I was done there? 2 reasons. One, I would be going out to do my sketch, and I would still have food in my mouth from the craft service table. You know, I'd be doing my lines, and I'd be like, "Yeah, so yeah, we could meet them there tomorrow." You know, and then I would go to my dressing room, which is between Farley's and Sandler's. All my friends were crammed in there. They had a blender. They were making margaritas. You know. And they weren't even watching. They had something else on the TV in there.
Oh, geez, yeah.
And I'm like, I got to get in there. I got to get in there and change. And the other reason was I got pushed out of doing SNL. I mean, I think most people don't know, if people aren't coming back on that show, it's usually because they've been fired.
Really?
So, and I didn't talk about it a lot, but Norm talked about his, and it kind of got him a lot of press, you know, because he was doing a lot of O.J. Simpson jokes. And the head of NBC was friends, I think, with Don Olmeyer was friends with O.J. Simpson.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, Sandler got fired.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know about Farley, but a lot of people got fired.
Farley got fired, I think, because of the drugs. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's usually how they shuffle them off, because otherwise people would stay there for a long time. I mean, I would have stayed there. I'd probably still be there right now.
So were you told, like, Kevin, it's time for you to move on, or just we've had enough of you, or you suck now, or what was the reason?
Well, first of all, I was very grateful to have been there that long, because I really felt like I had that imposter syndrome where I felt like I wasn't really a sketch player, and I wasn't. And every year when I got brought back, I thought, really? Okay. So, yeah, I did Weekend Update for 3 seasons. Then there was in the air, they were letting me go. And then my manager, who was very powerful and also managed Lorne Michaels, convinced them to keep me another year. And he said, you know, you got to do really good this year, you know, because I got Lorne to take you back. So you got to work hard. I said, I always work hard on that show. But they were taking me off Weekend Update, and they put Norm in. And Norm did a great job. People love Norm. But, you know, everybody that does Weekend Update, they bring their own personality to it, or their own style. I like doing it as, like, Chevy Chase did it, like as a real Weekend Update and not like a comic.
Right.
Commenting on the joke, or, you know, tongue in cheek kind of a stuff. So, yeah, I think I was a little hurt by that they took me off Weekend Update, even though I don't think I was a really good Weekend Update anchor. But so I kind of, like, you know, I used to do all the warm ups on that show for, you know, 9 seasons or once Dennis left, because Dennis used to do the warm ups. So, like, maybe 4 years, 5 years I did it on there. And then when I got let go, I kind of got angry. I said, well, you know, I really don't feel like doing the warm-ups anymore. So, you know.
How do you mean warm-ups? Like, they warm up the crowd before the show starts?
Yeah. And I liked it because you kind of got in touch with the audience. It got you out there. You wouldn't be that nervous. And stand-up is what I felt most comfortable doing. And they liked what I was doing a lot. And then so I stopped doing that. I stopped doing Weekend Update. I just tried to work as hard as I could writing sketches. And then, yeah, so Norm took over Weekend Update. And Norm had a writer. He had Jim Downey, the head writer, working with him, which was great. I mean, that was fantastic. And all the other writers. And yeah. And so here's the other thing, too, is I got it was a great way to exit. I got a sitcom with DreamWorks called Champs, which, you know, it was like a highly touted sitcom. And, you know, really high advertising spaces. And everybody thought I was going to go. I lasted like maybe 4 or 5 episodes. But I had that to go to. So it wasn't like I was just leaving the show and going back out on the road. Mm-hmm. So I was excited about that. This is how silly it was. My manager said, ask Lauren if you could have permission to leave the show to go do this sitcom. I'm already not coming back.
Yes, I got permission.
Yeah, that's what I said. Do your earbuds stay in your ear? Am I not doing it right? Should I use a smaller like rubber stopper?
I just use the little, I got just normal headphone cable that I just put one in. Yeah. So
that's a better.
Yeah. It keeps it in a little bit better. So there's the headline for the show. Neilan's earbuds fall out constantly. Last question about SNL is, was there a few guest hosts that were your favorites or maybe of like people that you were big fans of when you were starting, influenced by?
Oh yeah. Like Steve Martin I was his biggest fan. I love what he was doing. When a lot of comics start out, they emulate somebody. And when I was in the clubs, there weren't that many comics as there are now. Like everybody does stand-up comedy now. And back then it was only like, you know, you see like Italians doing it, African-Americans, Jewish people, and, you know, white people. And everybody was, somebody was doing Richard Pryor, you know, somebody's doing Woody Allen.
Right.
I guess there was some of me that was doing Steve Martin, Albert Brooks, and Andy Kaufman, because those are my three favorite. So when Steve Martin was on, I was just so excited, and I wrote some stuff, and I was in scenes with him, and I couldn't believe it. And then actually he hired me to do his movie a long time ago called Roxanne. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
Yeah, Roxanne. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was drunk number two in the beginning. I had a ski pole and I was dueling with him he had a tennis racket. Yeah. So I was excited about that. And I guess he had heard I was selected to be on SNL. So he thought he'd hire me. So Steve Martin was, and a lot of musical guests too. I was just really excited about James Taylor. I grew up loving, and Eric Clapton was on it. And a lot of these guys would stay afterwards and do a little concert, which is cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So when you left SNL, was there a lot of buzz? Because I mean, obviously you'd been on for so long. Was it easier to get gigs? Did you have to go back to start from scratch? How did that go?
Well, like I said, I went to I did that sitcom. So that was really a big distraction.
You said only 4 or 5 episodes, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they aired 4 or 5, but we did it. We did a lot of episodes, you know, so that was kind of a nice buffer from leaving. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that show is really funny. It's sometimes they'll make a big to-do about somebody leaving and they'll give a tribute to them and, you know, acknowledge how great they were. For me, it was just like, and same with Farley and Dana and Phil. I mean, I think Farley and Phil got a little bit of a send-off. They were sitting on the stage together at the end, which is kind of sad to think back now because they're both gone.
Right.
But no, I just kind of slipped out of there. There was no big fan.
So would you go back on the road again? I know you did a lot of acting. You're in a lot of movies. Is it kind of a combination of the two? Because here you are working 6 days a week for 9 years straight with some breaks in between in the off season, but that's a pretty hectic schedule. Is it easy to step off that conveyor belt?
No, you know, what's not easy to step off the conveyor belt is stand-up comedy, because I never stopped doing stand-up, even on SNL. And, you know, after rehearsing some nights, I go out to the clubs, or if we had an off week, I'd work there and get gigs. So that was the hardest thing. Like during the pandemic, you know, it was tough to, not be able to do stand-up comedy. And I know you're probably the same way. When you have some weeks off now, you go back into wrestling, you know, you jump into the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah. It's tough to do. It's tough to
do. Just to keep up on it. You know, just to keep up on it.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Well, something else that you're really into that I think is cool, and that you can see them all behind you, is doing the caricatures. And I know you have a book called I Exaggerate, but kind of talk about that, because that's, you're like the guy on the San Francisco pier that's like, come over here, and you draw the quick caricature, and there's some great ones there. I see Carvey's behind you and Harry Dean Stanton and a couple other cool cats. So how do you kind of get into that vibe?
like I said, I've always loved sketching caricatures, but I never really flushed them out like I have now, like the ones behind me and the ones that are in the book. I just did kind of quick sketches, and in the clubs, I would take a napkin, I sketch the comic, or if I'm on an airplane, I look over there, I sketch them on a barf bag or whatever, you know, whatever I have. And when I go to these, you know, carnivals or whatever, and I would see the character artist, I just wanted to stand behind that person and watch them draw. Everybody else went off on the rides, and I'm like, okay, I see what he's doing there. He's got that. And when I was a kid, I had two framed caricatures of my mother and father on the wall. And they were really good. They're from some Parisian artist that used pastels. And it wasn't like the kind you see, you know, at some of these fairs. And every night I would look at them because there was nowhere else to look. And I'd be studying how the artist did that. So, you know, for, I don't know, 12 years, I'd be looking at those two caricatures. So I think that really helped me out a lot. And then at SNL, we'd be sitting around the table read, and I'd be sketching, you know, Farley across from me, or Dana, or whoever, Jan Hooks. And then, you know, when Instagram came along, I started seeing some really good artists on Instagram. And those people kind of influenced me too. And I started connecting with some of them, and I started drawing, and I'd ask them, hey, do you think the eyes are too big, or is this too small? And they tell me, and I go, okay, thanks. Some of those guys are my mentors.
So when you do caricature, like, for example, like, what do you see, like, I'm not saying in a good way or bad way, like, if you're going to do one of me, like, what's the first thing? Is it a nose that you start with? Is it cheekbones? Is it eyes? Is it different for every person?
It's different for every person. You know, you have to look at the shape of the face. Like, you have a wide nose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that.
I guess I do now. I'm just checking out.
Yeah. And then you have the big smile with the teeth. So, you know, your smile would be big. You'd have a square chin. And a wide nose. You have kind of a slanty eyes.
You just got to lay it all out there.
Yeah. Some of my friends go, hey, why aren't I in your book? I said, because you're my friend. You
know? Exactly, right?
Yeah. But it is true. I can't walk around now without feel like I'm in a fun house, because everybody, I see everybody's outstanding features. And I go, okay, and that person I do, you know, like a little chin and droopy eyes or whatever. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, I can see that, because you're probably thinking in your head, how would I sketch this person if they asked me to, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, but I like doing the book. The book took me a couple of years to do it. I was started during the before the pandemic, and it was cool doing it during the pandemic, because I couldn't do stand-up anywhere. And caricatures, I would post them online. It's kind of like nonverbal comedy.
Mm-hmm.
People kind of laugh at it. And then when I was finished with that book, I mean, I just had it, man. I couldn't draw one more picture. I haven't drawn a picture or painted a picture like in almost a year. I just started back today.
Oh, wow.
Because somebody wanted a picture of someone for their birthday. Because I've been editing, you know, I did a hiking show, and I've been editing that, a lot of those.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the hiking show. I know you have that on YouTube. It's Hiking with Kevin. So kind of was that another pandemic idea?
No, it wasn't really. I had been doing that for 3 years before the pandemic. And I started doing it. I went hiking, and it's all in the canyons, mostly around LA. And I called my friend Matthew Modine, you know, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Matt, you want to go for a hike? He goes, sure. And I hadn't seen him for a while, and we're hiking up this really steep incline. We're both out of breath. And our conversation was very broken up with, you know, so Matt, mm-hmm. when you move from New York, and I thought this would be a funny, like, pseudo interview kind of a thing. So I kind of held up the camera like that and videotaped, and I posted it on Twitter, and it, you know, it was fun. It was fun. And then he said, you should do more of these. You should, like, call it Hiking with Kevin or something. And so I did. And then I got the selfie stick. And the first season is really bouncy, because I just have a selfie stick with, like, a, you know, an older camera.
Right.
Yeah. It was just, it was a lot more, techie as I went through each year. And now I have a GoPro on the end of a selfie stick. I have a drone I fly, and I edit it myself on Premiere Pro when I get home. But I've had some really fun guests on there. I've had like 150 hikes so far.
That's great.
Yeah, it's been fun, and I've got so many fun people. Like this year, I had Paul Rudd kick it off. Conan's been on a couple of times, and Sandler. I mean, a lot of it. And then I had one woman, Diane Nyad, I think her name was. She swam from Cuba to Florida. You know, she broke the record.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she talked about that. So yeah, I've been having a lot of fun doing that.
Is there some people that are better hikers than interviews, and some people that are better interviews than hikers?
Yeah, there's some. There's some that take it too seriously, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all really silly. I usually tell my guests, they say, you know what, I'm just going to ask you a lot of silly questions just so we can have bites, you know, those sound bites. And they go, oh, yeah. But some people are not that in shape. And they'll say to me, I can't do this. Like David Spade, for example, says, no inclines, and I'll do it. And it's got to be in between traffic rush hour, right? And I need snacks because I'm hypoglycemic. I said, okay, all right. So I found the flattest hike ever. And like we're 20 minutes in and it's flat. He goes, are we going up like a 1% incline here? You know, like that. But as the years have gone by, you know, now we're into year 6 with the pandemic. I didn't do anything during the pandemic. The first season started off with inclines like that.
Right.
The next season, like that. The next right. season, like that. And now it's just like that. Because I'm just like, don't want to work hard. And then next season will be downhill. I have my car waiting at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This one way down. That's it. That's all we got.
Yeah.
Do you find that when you see a guy like Spade or Adam Sandler again, you know, is it like kind of war buddies that you haven't seen them for years, but as soon as you get together, it's just like old times, like nothing's ever.
Yeah.
No time has passed.
Is that what it's like in wrestling? I bet it would be like that.
Yeah, it is. Or in music too. Or anybody that you were close with and you don't see him for a while. It's like, dude, how's it going? You know, nothing changes.
Yeah. It's the same with SNL. Yeah. When you see these guys, it's just kind of like, you know, it's like coming from a platoon in a war, you know, like I played football in college. I played for one season and these guys, they fell in love with me. And every time I'm performing in New York, they come and see me. Like, it's like an old army combat troop.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, when I see Sandler or Lovitz or Spade, I don't really see too many other people, I don't think, from that show. Tim Meadows, once in a while, I see him. He's on one of my hikes. Those guys have all done my hikes, by the way, except for Lovitz.
Well, yeah, not the most hiking type of a guy. Right. Another thing about your book, I exaggerate, is you told some great stories about the caricatures that you've done.
Yeah.
There's a really cool Gary Shandling story about when you did his eulogy at his funeral.
Yeah. Gary was a good friend of mine. He was my mentor. And I had known him for so long. And I used to watch him on The Tonight Show. And I just studied him, his style. I studied even what he wore. You know, he'd wear these really nice Armani suits. And of course, he died, I think it was about 6 years ago. And it was such a shock because it came out of nowhere. He had a blood clot. So anyway, they had the memorial for him. And there was so much love there for him. And you know, they were like showing pictures and different people getting up to speak. And I got up to speak and I had written something because it was a month after he died. So I had plenty of time to kind of reflect on our life together. I would be flying places, writing and thinking about him. So I had this eulogy I'd written and it was really out of love and everything that I remembered about him. And luckily I had it peppered with jokes. Otherwise I never would have gotten through it. Mm-hmm. So it would kind of like be very depressing. And then I would have a joke and it'd bring the audience back up, you know? Yeah. And then you get down the hill again, then another joke, like little islands of relief. So it was really, I think, probably one of the most responsive bits I've ever done before, because comedy always works better with tragedy, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's kind of the basis of most comedians is the Paganini type thing where it's a very dark based mindset that you could have for some of this comedy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. By the way, you're really good at this. You're really good at this.
Thanks, man. It's been 10 years. 10 years really? I've been waiting to have you. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I didn't even know you were doing this.
Yeah, I started it back in 2013. So yeah, it's over 1,000 episodes now. So.
Wow. You should be a lot better then.
Thanks. See, I'm trying. Let's talk about another great thing that I found. And I don't even know. I didn't even watch it. It's on YouTube and it's called The Worst Time I Ever Bombed. Do you remember this, this video here?
I try to forget every time I bombed.
It was a speech that you did about some kind of an elephant thing. You told it on the Tonight Show. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recall this?
I do. That was with Bob Barker.
Oh, well, tell me. I worked with Bob as well. What a guy.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
I worked with Happy Gilmore we did together. I was doing a lot of work with animal groups back then. And this was specifically PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Anyway, they had an elephant in a Milwaukee zoo. and they had very small enclosures for the elephant. And I think this one was called Billy the Elephant. Anyway, I went there with Bob Barker to, you know, try to raise awareness about the elephant. So you get them out of there and give them a bigger enclosure somewhere. They had a radio station that came and they were throwing peanuts and stuff. And, and then I like a year later, we're going down to the city hall in LA to really kind of talk about Billy the Elephant again. And I was on last. And people like Cher were getting up and really being very, you know, eloquent with their speaking. And, you know, you get a minute. You get a minute to speak. Everybody was really passionate about it. And I got up and I used like 30 seconds and I really had nothing left else to say because everybody said it, you know. So that's probably one of the times. And, you know, the zoo people had all the people on the other side with picket signs and stuff. Louis Tomlin.
That's the thing. You're thinking, I can do a minute about elephant. It's the big deal. You realize how long a freaking minute is, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it is. It's a long time.
So
the longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
As we start to wind down here, you're doing still a lot of stand-ups. And to me, this is kind of your part of your DNA. You obviously still love going on the road.
Yeah.
What do you do now with your stand-up as far as material-wise?
I've been doing stand-up for a long time. And you kind of always are evolving as a stand-up. Like you would be a musician. You're always looking for new things to keep you interested. So that's kind of what I've been doing. You just keep working on new material and different points of view, I guess you would say, to come up with material and take more chances. So It seems like a lot of my material has become very dark lately, probably because I'm getting older, you know, and I've always been more of an absurdist comic. I'm just thinking about this. I've been thinking about this for the last week or so, and I'm noticing a lot of these comics are filling up stadiums. I mean, like, you know, tens of thousands of people going out there, like they're, you know, like the Beatles or something. And I'm watching their specials. Because I'm wondering, you know, what I should be doing to get maybe 100 people in a club. And, you know, I met you on that radio station in Tampa. I was trying to get, you know, people to come and fill those seats. So I watched it. And I think for the most part, it's about material that the audience can relate to, whether it's about your family or your marriage or your personal, whatever's happening to you. And a lot of my stuff is just crazy, absurd stuff like that, you know. So I've been thinking a lot about that lately, about maybe restructuring my act.
So are you able to do that at this stage of the game? Completely change everything that you're doing?
I mean, I do some of that stuff. It's just that it's kind of peppered with that, you know, crazy, absurd stuff, you know. And it's kind of, like I said, it's dark too.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's fun. It's great. It gets good response, good reaction, but I think the more material you can do that people can relate to, it hits deeper, as opposed to that surface kind of, oh, that's nuts, man, what he said, that guy, instead of like, oh, yeah, honey, you do that. You do exactly what he was talking about. And they love it.
Let's, last few things. I meant to mention her earlier. I find she's one of the most underrated performers in SNL history. I know you had a personal relationship with Jan Hooks.
Yeah.
I'd kind of talk about Jan a little bit because I think people don't mention her when you talk about the overall. I think you guys would as the performers on the show.
Yeah.
But fans might forget. Like, she was so good in almost everything she did on that show.
She was amazing, Chris. She was such a star. She came from that sketch comedy background. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anybody has not seen her, you should check out on YouTube and look up Jan Hooks and those sketches. She was just amazing. Also, tremendous stage fright, which a lot of people don't know about.
Wow.
And we were dating at the time. So I was spending a lot of Friday nights over at her apartment, kind of trying to settle her down to get ready for the next night. And then she'd go out there and she'd kill it. You know, she would kill it. But, you know, they've had quite a few really outstanding women that were sketch players on that show over the years, you know. But Jan is right up there.
That's why I think Jan is right up there and doesn't get the mentions of, you know, Kristen Wiig or, you know, Gilda Radner. They talk about that and Sherry O'Terry and those type of girls. But
Kay McKinnon, think, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Right. Exactly. So I always want to give Jan some props when I
can. Oh, that's nice.
So,
yeah, yeah.
So there's a list of imitations and impressions here that you have known to be doing. And, you know, first of all,
before you even make that list, I don't do impressions. And when I was in SNL, they would give me characters to do that I somewhat look like or I could look like if they gave me
right. Okay. Well, let me just say what your interpretation is. And this list might even be bullshit. I don't know. But you obviously got like a Tom Selleck and a Rudy Giuliani. But when you see, yes, you might not do this. How about a Michael Gross? How do you do a Michael Gross? Of course, is the dad from Family Ties.
Family Ties.
Yeah. Did you ever do this one?
They give me a wig and a beard, and that's it. I play myself.
So that's the imitation, is that you just look like the guy.
I just look like him. And there was one character I did. I'm trying to remember his name. He's a newscaster. But anyway, he had droopy eyes. So I would go out there and do him, and I would hold my eyes down like this, like on Weekend Update, and do him. Sam Donaldson, his name was Sam Donaldson.
Yeah. I remember there was a Brent Musburger, a little bit. Charles Grodin, are these even guys that you would do?
No, I mean, Charles Grodin, I would love Tim in The Heartbreak Kid. Here's my one line for Charles Grodin. Oh, now, come on. That's all I can do.
That works.
Oh, now, come on.
Johnny Whitaker, like, oh, there's so many funny ones. I was like, I don't think he does any of these ones that are on here. Mr. Spock.
I was the first one to do Joe Biden, though, when he was a senator.
Oh, wow.
So I was pretty happy with that.
It's a fairly easy one to do nowadays, but what are the differences between Biden as a senator and Biden as the president?
No different at all. And I didn't even have his impression down. You know, he was like so unknown.
Right. Oh, it's funny. Last question for you, Kevin. What is, it's twofold. What's your favorite movie that you've ever been in, as far as like a character that you played? Because you've been in so many. Or TV show, you've been in so many.
Fun-wise, Roxanne, it was really fun because we did that in British Columbia. And we hung out for like 3 weeks up there. We had mountain bikes. It was a ski resort town. But I would say maybe Happy Gilmore, you know, with Adam Sandler. Harness the good, block the bad, feel the flow, Happy. It's circular, you know. And I got to hang out with Sandler and all those guys. And that was a great thing about doing those movies. It's kind of like a camp. You know, you play basketball all the time and playing guitars and just, you know, hanging out.
What about Weeds? We didn't talk about that. That was a pretty successful show that you were involved with.
Yeah, Weeds was great. It was a great show. I was hired on that for the pilot just to be a guest star. And then the show got picked up and the woman that created it, Jenji Cohen, wanted to keep me on the show. So that was great. It's funny, I was on that show, but I was not a pot smoker. And a lot of people go, how was that good pot on that show? I said, well, it's not real pot. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a show. It's a honey rose herb, it's called. And that's what they use in all these movies and TV shows where someone's smoking pot or regular cigarettes, because it's kind of very, you know, lightweight, and it's a honey rose herb. But it's still it's dangerous because we get it from the honey rose herb cartel in Colombia.
Colombia, South Carolina, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
And last question for you. What's your favorite SNL sketch that you were ever in? Is there one that stands out to you?
Oh, there's two that I really liked. You know, aside from the Hans and Franz stuff, I wrote one. I think it was one of my last sketches I wrote. It's called The Bathroom Attendant, where I played a bathroom attendant in a very, very small bathroom. It just had a toilet with no stall. And I could barely fit in there. And Harvey Keitel was hosting, and he came in and he thought I was using the bathroom. I said, no, I'd explain. I had a tuxedo. I said, no, I work here. He goes, oh, okay. So it's very awkward for him. And it's everything like, we go number one, or are you dropping anchor today? Oh, you're dropping anchor. Okay. There you go. I help him take his coat off. I put the seat down for him, you know, and as he's sitting there, he's got the paper over his head, the newspaper. We have Cologne, we have Aramis, we have High Karate, we have Brutes. He goes, no, I'm good. So I like that one. And then also there was one, I think Sandler wrote, maybe with a couple other guys. It was called, Bellissimo, I think it was called. It took place in a restaurant. And Kirstie Alley and I came in, we were a couple. And the waiters are all like Italian. They're kissing her. Hey, Maradona, what's it go? Come on, man. You know, and they kiss her. I'm like, well, hey, what's going on here? He goes, that's what they do, she says. And it just progresses. And, you know, it's like, you know, they're rubbing her hair. And, you know, she's sitting down. I'm like, what's going on here? And then in the background, you see Victoria on the table with her legs up. And one of the waiters is, you know, nailing her in the back. And then when we're leaving, like Santa's in a Speedo. You know?
I think there's, don't they even end up crawling into bed at some point? I think there was another sketch where they end up crawling into the bed. Bellissimo.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Kevin, it's been great talking to you, man. And I'm glad we had a chance to reconnect and hopefully get a chance to see each other again at some obscure radio show when we're both promoting something.
Yeah, absolutely. Text me anytime, too. I'll answer it this time.
I will. I got your number too. I'm going to make sure that it's still in there.
I must have answered your texts. I must.
You did.
I did like you. Yeah.
Well, you did. Yeah, Kevin Nealon. Let me see if there's any texts. Sometimes they disappear. Now the texts have disappeared, but the name remains. So I'm right back at you. I won't even show.
Oh yeah, yeah. I use invisible text ink. So
see, you're smarter than I am. I just showed your number to the world. Don't worry, this won't air.
Nice.
Thanks, man.
All right, man.
Cheers, dude.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. See you soon.